So it turns out the technological future is a lot more predictable than people think. Basically, you can see which technologies that are currently emerging are going to dominate in the future, typically years, sometimes decades in advance.
Welcome to Tech Talks, hosted by myself, David Savage, and powered by Nash Squared. On today's show, my guest is Jard van Ingen. He is the co-founder and CEO of Focus, a company that provides AI-powered technology forecasting. To join me today, I've got Akish. How are you?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. I mean, it's Monday morning, but it's not. It's let's be honest, it's Friday afternoon at the time of recording, or Friday morning rather, and this afternoon you're going out for a bit of a boozy lunch.
I am going out for a bit of a boozy lunch, yeah, correct. And the sun is out in London, so what can go wrong today?
I don't think we need AI-powered technology forecasting to tell us that you might be a bit loose later on.
Yeah, and also I will be in a spot of bother come tomorrow morning, but you know. I'll tell you what, it could measure the pain that I'm having from a headache tomorrow morning, probably. But you know, yeah.
What you need is a bit of AI to monitor
to
your drinking and
tell you
when to kind of like, you know what, have a little break now and have a little bit of hydration now, and you won't feel quite as bad in the morning.
That honestly, that would be beautiful. But I'd love to say that I think one of those times where people are like, oh, have some water now. You're like, no, I'm fine. You know, and it's like, oh, I don't know how much I listen to AI, but I probably should.
Well, look, Focus are focusing on more interesting problems than our mistreatment of our bodies. But it is a Friday. The sun is shining, so I think we can forgive you that you're going to go have a nice time this afternoon, Akish.
Yeah.
But before you do, we're going to listen to today's episode, and then we'll come back with some thoughts about something else that I suppose is technology on the near horizon. So speaking to Jard, Jard, let me get this right. You're the CEO of Focus. Are you one of the founding team? You're one of the you are a co-founder, right? You are a team of founders.
Yeah, correct. I am the co-founder together with my best friend, Thijs van der Poel. He's the CTO. We've known each other since we were 8 years old, worked together in the past. Everyone told us not to do it, not to risk the friendship, but I think it's one of the best decisions I've ever made.
I suppose have you been friends since you were 8? That's fairly solid foundations that should stand the test, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how I feel about it. I mean, you know, if you do something like this, right? You know, starting a business and then especially doing something that has never been tried or possible before. You know, it's pretty risky, and I can't think of anyone that I would rather be doing this with, right? I trust him with my life and vice versa. If he says he's going to get something done, I don't have to ever think about it again. And yeah, we know each other so well that also just in terms of communication, I mean, the Dutch are fairly direct, as you probably know. I think Thijs and I are in a possibly more extreme sense, but from a business perspective, that makes things pretty smooth because, you know, anything's up for discussion and you can get to the key issue really quickly.
So what is the business that the two of you are working on? Because I mentioned their CEO of Focus. If you kind of look online, it talks about the idea of fast-tracking technological progress by providing AI-powered technology forecasting. What is AI-powered technology forecasting?
Yeah, so it turns out the technological future is a lot more predictable than people think. Basically, you can see which technologies that are currently emerging are going to dominate in the future, typically years, sometimes decades in advance. And to explain how that works, I have to take you back a couple steps. Because in our case, all of the insights are based on metrics that are hidden in patent data. So generally speaking, if someone invents something, they go to the patent office and they file a patent for their invention. And this has been the case for hundreds of years now, in a highly standardized format that is well structured as well, and that is more or less consistent around the globe. So this leaves a really high quality track record of modern human technological development. And if you know what to look for, you can tell ahead of time where things are headed. And crucially, what we've been able to do is figure out a way to measure how quickly technologies are going to get better in the real world and cheaper before it has happened. So basically, we ingest all of the world's patents, turn it into areas of emerging technology using AI, and then look for metrics that are hidden in the citation network that are indicative of how quickly something's going to get better, such that senior R&D leaders have better information to take investment decisions with.
Give us a real-world example. Give us something where people can go, right, okay, so this is what it's really kind of doing for someone.
Yeah, so the most well-known case of technological disruption has to be the Kodak story, right? Everything used to be on photo film. Then digital was emerging. But the first digital images were so poor that you could hardly recognize whether you were looking at a person or an alien or something in between. So generally speaking, when technologies are still emerging, they suck, right? The quality is not there. It's too heavy, gets too hot, it's too expensive. There's all sorts of problems. And generally speaking, this leads to people in the field dismissing those technologies. They think that they're never going to get to the point where they need to be, or not within their lifetime. But all technologies improve exponentially, and people have a terrible intuition for things that change exponentially. So what tends to happen is you have the old technology, which performs really well. You have a new technology which is emerging and really sucks, yet both improve exponentially. So it's really far away, really far away, really far away, getting kind of close, too late. But the fact that this is going to happen, the disruption, you can already tell down here if you know the slope of the curve. And that's what we do. So we can tell you ahead of time how quickly something's getting better. Out of a set of competing technologies, the fastest improving one always wins, historically speaking. And so we could have told Kodak, if we would have existed back then in the early 70s, that it was basically game over for photo film and that it's just a matter of time. Same goes for lithium ion batteries, for example. So they emerged commercially in the late 80s, early 90s. And halfway through the 90s, we could have already told you that eventually they'd become so cheap and so good that EVs would become a possibility. Mm-hmm. And I can keep going with examples like this for the rest of the day if you want me to.
How much, and this is a really random question, I suppose, and maybe quite broad, but typically speaking, how much does an organization spend on R&D?
Well, yeah, it ranges vastly. Like it goes from, you know, thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions to billions to tens of billions.
Is there a percentage, kind of broadly speaking, that you can kind of? I mean, if we're thinking about public sector, for example, is there a kind of a percentage of a budget that more or less most organizations will normally expend on R&D?
It really differs, right? In some cases, it's just a few percent. In other cases, it's 10. In other cases, it's tens of percents. But in all cases, especially for larger corporates, regardless of exactly which portion of the budget is allocated, you're talking about really expensive decisions. So the people that we work with typically have to influence, either they make the decisions or they influence the decision making about budget calls that are hundreds of millions or billions. And so you want to make really damn sure that you're making the right decision. And because that is so hard to do, what tends to happen is that people spread out their bets. So they hedge their bets. So they bet a bit on this, a bit on that, a bit here, a bit there. They want to have a finger on the pulse everywhere. And then if something gets big, they keep adding more money to it. But that's a really inefficient process, because for 90% of the things that they're keeping a finger on the pulse on, we can already tell way ahead of time, this is not going to go anywhere.
I suppose that's the crux, that if you can convince them that instead of spending all that money spreading bets that they can spend with you and that they're going to get the results that they're looking for, then you're onto a winner, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Who are the companies then that are taking you up on this? Or is it, because I would imagine it's kind of going to be quite cost-sensitive organisations. You know, I mentioned public sector because public sector springs to mind. If government can reduce cost on this kind of stuff and get a jump start, that's going to be really, really a positive for them.
Yeah, exactly. So in fact, our largest customer currently is the US government, where we work with policymakers around technology strategy. So in the case of the US government, it's not so much, or any government, it's not so much about investing in a particular technology, but it's about shaping policies such that technologies that will dominate are likely to have a significant economic base within their jurisdiction. So if we already can tell ahead of time that this is going to be a big deal, then how do I create an ecosystem such that that type of business can flourish in my country? But also, it's important to understand what will the geopolitical consequences be if something that is currently not super important will become super important. How do I secure supply chains, right? How do I make sure now that I have access to the materials that I need in the future when this does become a big deal? And then in the case of corporations, we work, for example, with Reckitt in the UK, as one of our larger customers. And they're interested in all sorts of things, right? They do nutrition, consumer goods, all sorts of things. So, you know, what is the next generation of sustainable packaging materials such that we can get rid of plastics, right? There's hundreds of them that are emerging. But which one do we pick and why? Or when it comes to nutrition, how do we make sure that people age healthier? Is it going to be a direct nutritional intervention? Does there need to be some sort of AI technology involved? Will it be a combination of all of those things, etc.? And then, yeah, every corporate has its own challenges, but in every single case, you know, if you just look at the sheer number of technologies that exist today, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of emerging distinct fields. So not even single inventions. Individual inventions were over 200 million now throughout history. So the sheer number of things that they need to keep in consideration are so large that it's basically impossible to do this in any other way.
So look, all of this kind of begs the question, and I know you can't answer in minute detail, but everyone wants to know the trends, everyone wants to know where the industry is going. What are the technologies that, when you look at your customers, the focus is falling on?
Well, yeah, I can't go into specifics, of course, because these are really sensitive topics to these companies.
But as general broad themes.
Yeah, so general broad themes, we do a lot of work in sustainability. So for luxury goods, for example, there we are working with LVMH, and they are really serious about reducing their carbon footprint. So that means basically every single material that you use needs to be different. And for all the materials they currently use, there's dozens or hundreds of sustainable alternatives that they could be using. So that's a vast project to map out all of them, understand them, compare them, and then make the forecasts to understand where they ought to be putting their R&D money now. But that falls within the realm of sustainability. Then the energy transition is a big topic. So everything ranging from batteries to hydrogen and anything in between. And then, of course, AI is a big deal. And interestingly enough, you can see evidence of this all around you, but according to our own metrics as well, artificial intelligence is the fastest improving technology that humankind has ever seen.
And looking in a bit more detail around some of the work that you're doing, just having a look on your website this morning before we hit record, you work with Philips and medical devices. And funnily enough, medtech is an area that if you were walking around CES, you could see there's a huge amount of excitement and investment going on in medtech. Philips is on that journey to becoming kind of a real pioneer where it comes to medical devices. There's a plethora of devices out there. I suppose understanding what to invest in such a broad range of products and when to invest is also something that is quite challenging for organizations to get their head around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not just what is going to win. It's also when is it going to win? Because if you're too early, like pouring more money onto the problem in the case of technology, generally speaking, doesn't work. And you see this also with startups, right? When we were still at 0% interest rates, people were raising loads and loads of money. But that doesn't, you know, that leads to growth, but like what kind of growth, right? Now there's all sorts of companies that are firing half of the people they hired because they realized, you know, it's just not bringing in real value. And the same is true for technological development, right? Developing technologies is really difficult. And the biggest bottleneck is just the some technologies just have a certain difficulty level associated with them. And so pouring more money onto the problem doesn't necessarily work. So interestingly enough, also in our own findings, when you look at the number of patents, right, you would think it's logical that if there is more inventing happening in a space, there should be more progress. And there is a zero correlation. So just pouring more money into it so that more people can work on the technology and invent more things doesn't necessarily speed things up. And so the timing issue is really crucial, because if you're just too early, you're just going to burn a bunch of money. And, you know, that's not what you want to do. You want to get in right at the sweet spot where you're just a few years away from a breakthrough in terms of competitiveness of an emerging technology. But also you don't want to be too late, because if you're too late, then someone else is already dominating the space and then it becomes really difficult to catch up. So the timing issue, like you mentioned, is also a crucial thing that we really try to help out with.
So look, last thing that I'll leave you with, as I said, we were both at CES. We were both able to walk the floors, and well, I don't know. Maybe you were tied a little bit more to kind of exhibiting and talking to people as they came past the focus stand. But what questions popped up in your head as you're walking around and as you have the chance to talk to other CEOs, other co-founders?
Yeah, well, we did, like you said, we didn't have a lot of time to go around because we were more or less bound to the stand. But of course, you do interact with some others. And I think, you know, a big theme for me was just to see AI everywhere and how quickly it's gone. And this is also a key hallmark of technologies that improve really rapidly, because there is a really strong correlation between the rate of improvement in a technology and how quickly it diffuses throughout society. So if you think about cars, for example, it took a really long time from the invention of the automobile until everyone had one. Whereas with AI now, right, it's pretty recent and it's already everywhere. So biggest takeaway for me was that this, you know, it's going to change everything about everything, and it's going to happen much faster than people think.
Well, look, it's been a pleasure to speak to you today. Thank you for giving up some time, and good luck as the year progresses.
Thanks. I really appreciate it.
Right, Yard's talking all about technology forecasting. Something that I spotted on TechCrunch that I thought was also very interesting. There is a company that is trying to get us to move away from screens and move on from the smartphone. So let me give you a little bit of a summary. Humane's AI Pin is considering life beyond the smartphone. Akish, I gave you a quick heads up on this and a look through what this is, a wearable device that uses generative AI, basically, I suppose, as an in-life assistant. What do you think?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I honestly, I don't know, Dave. I think it's a good idea. Do I think, you know, the touch panel, the microphone, you know, things like that, useful. But everything on my hand, or in my hand, so to speak. I mean, I don't know.
I think it's one of those things that it'll be more ubiquitous. It's
good word.
If you're say you're out on a night out, right? Say let's go back to our earlier thing about you having a drink.
Yeah.
If you've got something that projects onto your hand and you can talk to it, it's like a little pin that's attached as a lapel to your clothing almost, or to the lapel of your clothing. Mm. And you can just have a quiet word and go, you know, I just need to know what time my train is. Rather than getting your phone out and whatever else, it's just stuff like that that would be really very useful as an assistant. Just, I think you'll use it far more fluidly if it's just something that you can have a little bit of a quiet chat with and go, oh, hang on, can you just get that information for me?
Yeah. I think also it would be very much of a. I think it would be great for people in certain careers where maybe they can't have access to their phone straight away. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, in a bank on a trading floor, things like that, right? Or out on, you know, some sort of a building site or construction and, you know, stuff like that. I feel like, yeah, it's got a lot of uses. It'll be very good for like a field sales type of person, I feel, you know, because if they have something, they can show their, you know, kind of the products, the services, things like that. So there is a lot of use. And yeah, I mean, you can see, right? Like it's raised over $230 million. So there's obviously interest from investors. And you know, it's not coming in cheap either to get one, right? Like what, $700?
It's interesting that the article talks a little bit about like the hype around Siri and Alexa and stuff had began to wane a little bit. And I think that's because it's quite limited, right? It's not that technology. It's not as useful as you want it to be. Like there are a lot of things you can ask Alexa where she'll turn around and go, I don't understand. Since Steve Cook took over at Apple Tim Cook took over at Apple rather, and Steve Jobs passing, there hasn't really been that vision. And this is a group of ex-Apple who are coming along and doing something that could be really quite exciting to move us beyond smartphones.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it'll be, I mean, look, 20 years ago, people said, what, cars on electric? No, get out of it, right? And look where we are now. So I think this is the way forward. I feel like, you know, we probably need to, need to find use of it. And if it is useful for you on a day-to-day, then fantastic. For me personally, I'm good with a smartphone and stuff and screens at the moment, right? So, yeah.
Akish is not moving on from his screen just now.
Not yet. I probably will have to, but yeah.
Akish, thank you for joining me today. Yard, thank you for being our guest. We'll be back on Wednesday when we're talking to Peter Morgan.
Tech Talks is hosted and edited by David Savage. It is produced by Nash Squared. And we have special thanks to Lemzy for supplying music to this show.